This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dasran Johan. Has Pakatan Harapan lost its luster? The voter turnouts at the recent string of elections have been low. Pakatan Harapan has faced defeat after defeat. Now, many political analysts have suggested that a big chunk of the voters who aren't going out to vote are fence-sitters who previously voted for Pakatan Harapan. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing Harapan's failings as well as some shakeups happening in the camp consisting of PKR, DAP and Amana that may potentially rejuvenate voter interest. Joining me on the show today to share his insights is Iskandar Faris. He's part of DAPC Federal Territories. DAPC is DAP's youth wing. Welcome to the show, Iskandar.
Hello, Dasran. Thank you for inviting me. It's good to be here again.
Let's go back to the Johor elections, which took place a few weeks ago. It was a milestone for many reasons, and one of which was the implementation of Undi 18 and AVR, which is automatic voter registration. This means from Johor elections and moving forward, every Malaysian adult is considered a registered voter. They are part of the electorate. Now, the most alarming statistic to come out of the elections, as far as I'm concerned, is the voter turnout. And it was only at about 54%, Iskandar, which means 45% of the Johor population opted not to vote. What does this signal to you, Iskandar?
When the PRN Johor or Johor State election took place, we were standing in the midst of the wreckages left by the combined rule of Perikatan Nasional and Barisan Nasional 24 months of administration. So even today, we are still under that 24 months administration of both Perikatan Nasional and Barisan Nasional. This has left a blaze of devastation in their wake. Without an effective government, the people have been forced to fork out their life savings. And as you can see, in many occasions with withdrawal of EPF, they had to dip into the their own retirement funds just to survive, because there are no proactive measures to help the people from the government. At the same time, this actually exacerbated the political fatigue that has set in long before the series of recent state elections. We always think that a non-performing government might incur the wrath of voters, but I think when you cross a certain line, the disillusionment thickens, and because you don't see hope at the end of the tunnel, especially when we see the disunity within the opposition bloc also compounding towards that voters' disillusionment. The result is they weren't inspired, especially new voters were not inspired to go out to vote. Going back to the 50%, around 50% figure,
right?
Although it's quite low, the absolute figure for the turnout is quite close to 2018. We see in 2022, 1.4 million voters turned out to vote, while in 2018, 1.3 million turned out to vote. Why the difference in outcome? Because the different sets of voters who came out to vote. We see the bloc for Barisan Nasional maintained. They managed to actually energize their ground or their close or strong supporters to go out to vote, while Pakatan Harapan obviously rely on more swing voters. And this time around, we didn't manage to energize the swing voters to come out in droves to vote. And also because our outstation and overseas voters didn't turn up, while there are new voters also, the newly registered voters, while they can vote, some of them didn't realize that they can vote. So we have to take into context when 2018 was first passed, we thought that young voters would automatically support the opposition bloc or be rebellious in a way to vote against a government. But we have to realize that these are the cohort, a new cohort of voters, and they have no memories of participating in democratic activities before, even not joining Berseh in when it was in its heyday, let alone Reformasi era. So that lies in the challenge of us in the opposition bloc. We need to find new ways or fresh ideas to connect with this new breed of voters.
Iskandar, I want to ask you, how serious is this 50+ percent voter turnout? Because you bring up the absolute numbers, and you're right, you know, it's this 1.5 plus million compared to 1.3 million voters. But that doesn't necessarily instill a sense of confidence in me, because what it tells that it tells me is that even during GE14, the height of, you know, the Berseh protests and the momentum of Pakatan Harapan, there was, and, you know, that you can say it started all the way back in 1998, only brought up this amount of voters, which means that the percentage-wise and things like that, yes, back then we said like it was 80% and all, but a lot of people were not registered voters. So it's 80% out of registered voters. I think if we sort of try to loosely translate that numbers in current context, it would have been the Johor elections would have brought about 60-odd something percent. How serious is this?
When Undi 18 was passed, it was actually a great feat for the nation. But for the in terms of implementation, we also need to realize that those who are freshly out of school, there weren't any programs or outreach initiatives by the government or political parties to actually engage these people. For political parties, we understand, like DAP and those in the opposition, we are not able to engage with students when they are in school. So that leaves us at a great disadvantage. So in terms of political education, we are at a very nascent stage, which then result in people's understanding of the value of vote and why you need to vote. This also needs to be read with together with the overall context of today, where people are looking for a way out of this political impasse or political fatigue. Since Sheraton move in 2020, a lot of political maneuverings have been happening, and this has not inspired confidence or sparked hope again in the hearts and minds of the people. Instead, apathy sets in. But this is again just a symptom of a larger problem where the population feels detached from the process because of political maneuverings happening beyond our control. It's natural for the population to feel that, why are we contributing, or why do we need to vote again when the outcome of this vote might be susceptible to change if someone from any other party jumps and decide to maneuver and take over power. So this, I think, explains the discrepancy. We have we have automatic registration now. Everyone who are of age can vote, but not necessarily they will go down to vote because of these reasons.
Right. And on that note, there are two narratives to come out of the Johor state elections. Now, one of it is the rehabilitation of UMNO and Najib, you know, and whether they were able to galvanize support, whether Najib is becoming more and more popular as the days pass. But for the purpose of this discussion, I want to put that aside a little bit and focus on the second narrative, which is that with everything that is said and done, UMNO only received 45% of the vote share. And that's, you know, you can say that right now, that's perhaps their core voter base. Whereas a chunk of people who didn't show up to vote Like you mentioned, are fence sitters. And many have pointed out that these fence sitters who didn't show up to vote previously voted for Pakatan Harapan, which means that it is the Harapan side of the fence that couldn't galvanize their voters, couldn't inspire their voters to come out and vote. Do you agree with this narrative? And if so, why do you think potential Harapan supporters in particular decided not to vote?
People are voters are looking for a way out, especially after 2 years in a very devastating pandemic, which ushered a great divergence within the country. We've seen in Malaysia, there are two different sets of Malaysians. Those who actually during COVID managed to survive, and those who falls through the cracks because the system itself didn't support them or actually expose or make them more precarious to the disruption of COVID-19. We are talking about people in the service sector who didn't have enough or sufficient safety net that would cover in any cases of job losses or a disruption in business or economic opportunities. So we are looking at a very, widening discrepancy between these two groups, the haves and the have-nots.
Right.
And they don't see how this problem, this very real problem that they see in front of them can be related to politics, how politics can actually affect changes in this very real part of their lives. So with that detachment between that two worldview, it's only natural that people would say, let's not think about politics, let's just focus on having food on the table, bringing food to the table, work, bring in the money to survive every single day. And we've seen this on the ground when we were campaigning in Johor. A lot of people feel disillusioned because they don't see how elections can solve their everyday problem. And to that, I think for DAP and Pakatan Harapan as a whole, there needs to be a refresh in strategy. While 2018 was a fight against a government, against BN or against Najib, the fight onwards from today should be about building a new Malaysia or building a better tomorrow for the voters.
Do you think, Iskandar, that Pakatan Harapan's time in power contributed to this disenfranchisement, especially among the Harapan base? Because, yes, there was a renewed sense of excitement among many Malaysians the days following GE14, but after that, it felt pretty much like status quo. As the months followed, people, especially the haves not, didn't feel like their lives improved at all in any meaningful way, especially when we look at bread and butter issues.
Admittedly, when we won power in 2018, that was our first bout as government, a federal government, which is very or vastly different than being a state government. Policies might have not been ironed out fully, and compromise or consensus building didn't take place as much as we would have wanted to. I believe from then on and after Langkah Sheraton or Sheraton Move, the lesson is quite clear for us. And with each setbacks that we face in the state elections, like Melaka, we learned that the voter profile for Barisan or Pakatan Harapan might not be the same, because for Barisan, they might be okay with frogs. And for Pakatan Harapan, they will punish any parties that accept frogs. For Sarawak election, we learned that we can't campaign on the basis or on the platform of being a stronger opposition. We need to campaign as the next government. And with Johor, a more solid or fleshed out policy ideas were pushed through for the voters. But I think the the engagement or the outreach towards the voters wasn't enough, and there wasn't enough time to really go into the meat of the policy. So I think with each and every setback we've learned, and for the next bout of election, be it state or general election, we will be better prepared than the previous outings in state elections.
Has Harapan, since coming into power in 2018, become a cleaner version, yes, but of the exact same coin? And I'm asking this because following the fall of Pakatan Harapan, many, including the likes of, let's say, Dr. Sharifah Munira Alatas, they talked about how 2018 was a change in administration, and that's an important first step. It's still a monumental moment, but it wasn't a change in a system. It wasn't a change in an ideology besides the anti-corruption factor. There's no doubt that Harapan is less race-based, more diverse. It isn't ridden with corruption scandals. But again, people point to, you know, was there any inspiring or radical socio-economic policies? People point to the fact that the country under Harapan's rule didn't become, for example, when we just look at economics, didn't become more economically left. In that sense, there was not changes. So ultimately, it was the same Barisan Nasional sort of socio-economic outlook, just in a, you know, with a fresh face, perhaps a cleaner government in that sense. Do you think that Pakatan Harapan has become a cleaner version of the same exact coin since 2018?
I believe the ideas that we have brought to the table, especially as the opposition post Sheraton move, has shown that we are a different breed of government. Even the budget that we came up with last year, that was supposed to be budget 2022, as a result of the MOU, has some progressive measures, including child benefit measures to start looking at a social safety net that is more comprehensive rather than a patchy one such as BRIM. So these are, I think, foundational layout that is essential for us to move forward into a society that is more caring towards each other and a more solidaristic society. So I think that ideology, if you want to use that word, differentiates us from a government that just gives cash without proper thought. We can give cash, or we can just give out the ability or permission for them to break their own banks through the EPF. But I think there needs to be a more methodical way of thinking and how to build a sustainable social protection or social protection network or infrastructure for the larger populace. And while at the same time trying to build greater jobs for the young and also the larger community. So I think that part of policymaking hasn't been fleshed out by any other blocs, and we are trying to move the new generation of DAP and Pakatan Harapan towards that direction.
You criticized Barisan Nasional for pushing for EPF withdrawals, but that's exactly my point, isn't it? Because there are DAP top leaders who, prior to the Johor elections, pushed for the exact same thing. It was a populist move to try and win elections. So you can see why these things can contribute to fatigue or disillusionment among the quote-unquote progressives.
I believe there are room for discussion from the point of view of personal opinion. I think some might have supported that move to withdraw, right, EPF. But I think as a majority and official stand of Pakatan Harapan, we emphasize that there needs to be a more structured approach at social protection rather than allowing or just conflating people's own money as government intervention.
On the show with me today is Iskandar Faresh. He's part of DAPC Federal Territories. After the break, we talk about some of the shakeups taking place in Harapan. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan, and on the show with me today is Iskandar Faresh, who's part of DAPC Federal Territory. DAPC is DAP's youth wing, and we're talking about why Harapan hasn't been inspiring voters in recent months, as well as the future of the coalition. So, Iskandar, let's look at the future, because Pakatan Harapan is undergoing some changes, potential shakeups. You're from DAP. DAP just concluded its party elections. We've got a new Secretary General. Anthony Lok has replaced Lim Guan Eng after Lim Guan Eng's term has completed. Now, terms like the new era of DAP has been used. So what's going to be new about DAP moving forward? What's going to be different?
So the party's renewal comes as the DAP marks its 56th anniversary, or our 56th anniversary. So what we see is that the change of leadership is showing a stepping up of commitment for DAP as a party for all Malaysians, in light of the changing or increasingly challenging political landscape. It's not just a new lineup, but it will bring fresh ideas and approach and new way of doing things. We've seen here the composition. It's a good mix of second, third, and fourth generation of elected reps. We have Tan Kok Wai, Chow Kon Yao from the second generation, Anthony Lok from Ngobin and Liu Chin Tong coming from the third generation, Stephen Sim, Wong Kar Wai, Hannah Yeo from the fourth generation. So we have a very good mix of a different generation of elected representative, combined with the inclusive leadership approach that Anthony Lok has emphasized, and his tendency or his commitment towards consensus building. I think the party will set to benefit as the party is able to tap into the diverse set of talent from experience. From the experienced ones to those who can bring a fresh point of view. Even our youth wing, DAPC, at the national level, has also seen a fresh lineup with Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching, taking helm from Pasir Pinji Assemblyman Howard Lee. So with this comes the bigger challenge. DAP must play its role, or our role, as movers and thinkers of society to come up with innovative solutions and policies for issues, not just for the youth, but also for all Malaysians from all walks of life.
On that same note, PKR, Parti Keadilan Rakyat, which is a component party of Pakatan Harapan, is also holding their party elections soon. There's most likely not going to be any changes at the top, and Anwar Ibrahim is going to continue being the chief of Parti Keadilan for the near future. But Rafizi Ramli is back from hiatus. He's going to be running for the deputy president post, marking his active return to frontline politics. It seems like YB Nuruliza is also becoming more actively involved recently, after also sort of moving away from the frontline of politics over the past couple of years. How will this affect PKR and Harapan moving forward, according to you?
Well, more youth participation and featuring fresh faces in the front line, I think, is a good move. Doing that could reignite the spark of hope and hopefully solidify a way forward as we approach upcoming elections. Just to caution that a refresh in personalities alone is not enough. Mm-hmm. We must build a network of change makers and movers. As we recall, Malaysia's democratization, or what happened in 2018, wasn't any single party's agenda or just because of any single party. Elections were won or are won because of we win over the middle ground, the middle ground voters. The government fell because in 2020 because the politicians deserted this middle ground. Each went to the the extremes, because we pander to those noises that came in after 2018. But what I want to emphasize is that an election cannot just be won by politicians who come alone acting like a superhero. It needs to be a team or cohort of change makers that can really inspire the people. And when we flash back to 2018, like you mentioned, a lot of it was a build up from many different political rallies or mm-hmm. engagement, be it Per Se or Tangkap Najib and different other reconfiguration of civil society. So in that sense, a similar movement or reconfiguration needs to happen this time around. So when we say building a broad-based coalition, we need to look at building a coalition or an alliance across not just party politics, but also the NGOs, interested individuals, in order to build up a new Malaysia, not just to fight against something, but to build something together.
But, you know, in contrast, an idea that has been floated around by some Pakatan Harapan leaders is this idea of coming up with a big tent approach again. And the basis of this idea is that the votes against Barisan Nasional at Johor was higher than the votes for Barisan Nasional. And so if the opposition consolidates, we can win Barisan Nasional. Is this a healthy and strategically sound approach for Pakatan Harapan, just opening a big tent and including all the quote-unquote anti-BN parties under one umbrella? And is that a good strategy?
Well, let me say first that going alone is not an ideal strategy. Any parties, especially within the opposition ranks, shouldn't go alone. And it needs to be together, at least as a Harapan bloc, and then look at a bigger approach of consolidating or joining forces with similar aligned players who would then be able to work together to build the next government. What I am trying to push for is more than just a political reconfiguration, but also a reconfiguration that taps into the talent of non-partisan actors, like you yourself, or media practitioners, individuals in legal fraternity, or right. In volunteer groups. So because we have different agendas to fulfill. Right. To build a new Malaysia, or to build a better Malaysia, we need to overcome many sets of grand challenges. So, for example, we need to overcome food security issues. We need to overcome job creation issues, quality job creation. We need to overcome climate change issues. So these are very complicated issues that need sophisticated methods of solution. So people might say we need policies, but to me, I think policies is just another word for solutions. We are basically facing grand challenges and grand problems every single day. And to overcome that, we need a solution that we can come up with together as a society. So how to do that? We need to realign our energy and effort. Because in the past 24 months, we have seen lives lost, families destroyed, livelihoods crushed. Priority is now to build back better from this wreckage. If we used to do something in a certain way, maybe there are new ways of doing it so that we wouldn't face the same problem again when the next pandemic or once-in-a-lifetime crisis sets into our doorstep. So new ideas and new approaches have to be employed. So this can as well reach out to the disengaged voters. Why people are disengaged, why people are facing apathy, is because it's a symptom that the population is detached from the process of decision making or political alignment. For these reasons, I think we need to democratize decision making, include back the public into the democratic process. So as a party and as a coalition, this is something we need to overcome so that we can reignite the spark of hope and get people to care about politics again.
What do you think should be done or will be done by your Pakatan Harapan top leadership as far as the Perikatan Nasional factor is concerned? Should Pakatan Harapan work with Perikatan Nasional in the name of electoral strategy or stick to your principles, focus on yourselves and focus on building stronger relationships with voters on the ground, especially disillusioned voters?
As I mentioned at the start of this conversation, we have that 40% room to grow. Mm-hmm. Those who haven't voted in this election, right. They are eligible but haven't voted in any elections. So this, I think, is the potential room to grow. Mm-hmm. And DAP and Harapan should think through on how to engage with this new frontier of voters. I think many leaders have said the same thing during the DAP convention or Congress last week, right. That the priority is to build ourselves so that we are stronger to attract these sets of voters. And cooperation right now is limited to our allies and friends that have been declared publicly. So I think focus needs to be zoomed in at rebuilding trust in Pakatan Harapan as the next government. That should be our priority, and we need to work on how we can sell a set of ideals or ideas and solutions to overcome the people's problem that they are facing every day.
All right, before I let you go, Iskandar, any final thoughts on Pakatan Harapan moving forward?
So as we all see today, Malaysian political landscape is at a crossroad. We are at a juncture. And the rejuvenation of leadership, especially among DAP, within DAP's strengths and also other Pakatan Harapan parties in the coming months, is slated to inject a renewed spirit to build a better tomorrow for Malaysia. I admit inspiring a new generation of change makers would not be an easy task, but it has to start today. There is a need to energize the public. We need to have an understanding that involvement in politics should be a part and parcel of change. Some people say, let's focus on policies without politics. But politics without policies will just make hot air politician.
Right.
A lot of huffing and puffing without any substance. Policies without politics is the realm of dreamers, abundance of great ideas, but not the slightest chance of realizing them. We need to have these two, politics and policies, hand in hand. We need to realize that we all have the agency to bring the change we want to see. What the actions we take today will not just impact the near future, the elections that are coming up, but also the 5-10 years generations to come, our children, our children's children. So there's no better time to act rather than today.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Iskandar. That was Iskandar Faris. He's part of DAPC Federal Territories. DAPC is DAP's youth wing. If you missed any part of today's conversation, you can check us out on podcast. We are available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.